Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650 is a Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us, our regular guest. You're joining us on a Tuesday instead of a Wednesday, though. We appreciate him accommodating us. From Sportsnet's NHL coverage, a former NHL scout, he is Jason Bukala. Jason, what's going on, man?
What's up, fellas? Little call from the bullpen on a Tuesday. I like it.
Well, we have the day off tomorrow, so we, as I said, we really appreciate you accommodating us. We don't want to miss a hit with you. We enjoy it so much. And you mentioned you gave us a little tease last week. You were on your way to the NHL Draft Combine. You said you'd have some good stories for us. So, what were your what kind of stood out for you? What did you see? What is your big takeaway from the NHL Draft Combine this year?
Well, first thing is I have to say that. In all the years that I've been doing it, there was a time that I really felt like the kids were almost programmed by somebody, whether it be the agent, the coach, the parents. I don't care who it was, but you know what I mean. They were always giving standard answers. Just like, you know, you had to draw some personality out of them. Fast forward to last week, and it was the exact opposite. This is an exceptional group of young men. They're coming through the turnstiles this year for the draft, and it was a lot of fun that way. It was refreshing. It made the days go by really quick. We didn't have to pull any teeth for answers, and everybody was accommodating. It was a fun week. It's a really, really good group of coachable young kids, and it was kind of refreshing, to be honest with you.
What are you looking for most? I mean, because, you know, as you said, you want everyone to share their real personality, not be programmed, not be robotic, right? But, like, what in general do you want to hear more than anything from these interviews at the Combine?
You know, I just be honest. Just be, you know, just assess with a lens that's realistic. You know, like, if you're a third line player and, you know, you're a crasher and a banger and you're a team guy and you extend plays and do it really well and contribute in that role, you know, don't come in and tell me that you're comparable at the NHL level as Nathan MacKinnon. You know what I mean? And it's just recognize, you know, your strengths, your weaknesses, and then also, you know, take a look back at the last year and reflect a little bit and, you know, what could I have done better here? Or, you know, what did I learn? What was my takeaway from this high leverage situation? And, you know, situations like that, or even, you know, some of the kids have never gone through coaching changes before. You know, some of them have gone through that where a coach has been let go at the junior level or sometimes the pro level overseas. And, you know, how did that affect you? You know, how did that affect your preparation? Not putting a spin on it, you know, their personal opinion of the ex coach, just, you know, that's something that you have to kind of reset yourself when. So, you know, just looking for that maturity from them at, and it is difficult, I have to be honest, because sometimes you have the language barrier, obviously, and then other times, some of these guys have never even been in a job interview, let alone an NHL interview. We're a little bit less, you know, we're not hard on them at all, you know, at Sportsnet, but some of the teams I'm sure are, and that's a challenge for them.
Books, looking over your top 10. You've got Macklin Celebrini, Vancouver boy, number one. You've got Tiija Ginla from Lake Country, number five. You've got Berkeley Catton out of Saskatoon, but trained in the Okanagan at number eight. And you've got Caden Lindstrom, another BC boy, number nine. When's Ontario going to get back to pulling its own weight, man?
You know what I love about what you just did there? It's like anybody who trains in the Okanagan now just falls under the umbrella. It's like they bought a golf membership to the Drancer Open, for crying out loud.
Legitimate BC guys.
We're claiming the whole. We're claiming the whole
academy.
Dub at this point, Bukla. The whole Western.
Yeah.
League.
Well, no, but Catton's an academy product out of the Okanagan. That's fair.
That is fair. Absolutely, it's fair. I mean, where these kids develop, that's totally fair. It's a good year for you know what? It's been a couple of good years, and it's going to be. I think there's some more on the horizon coming from Western Canada, not just the WHL, but coming out of the academies, as we know. And you know, there's momentum in, on the left coast with for producing talented players, whether they just go on to be juniors or college players, which is really a fantastic achievement in itself, or you know, someday NHL prospects. And yeah, those names you just dropped, they're all in my top 10.
With a name that is not a BC kid, but maybe could play with one. Ivan Demidov, okay?
Yes.
If you're Chicago, what's your thought process here in deciding between Demidov and Levshunov at the top of the draft order?
Well, since Chicago is in that mode where they really can use just a top-end prospect anywhere, obviously, you know, the Bedard draft coming through and you know, they're in full-on rebuild. There's rumors abound. I'm sure you guys are all hearing the same ones that, you know, they're going to be pretty aggressive in free agency this year. So I believe that their retool or rebuild is going to be expedited a little bit. For me, honestly, I'm splitting hairs on the two players. I know it's easy to say that, but you got a right shot D in Levshunov, who's big, strong, mobile, produces offense, and when I say big and strong, I mean we're talking, you know, 6'2", 205 strong, and he skates and produces offense, can quarterback the power play, rip pucks. But with Demidov, honestly, some of the people that you and I have come across over the years, Jancer, in our travels, you know, that have been in Russia and are people that we know in Europe, they've warned me that If the table was turned and all we had was video to watch on, say, Celebrini in reverse order here, that Demidov might even have more momentum. So with that in mind, Demidov is skating next week in Florida at Dan Milstein's camp. And all 32 teams, I believe, are going to be in attendance, including yours truly as not a team. But I'm going to go down and take a look at this kid with live eye. Elite offensive, I don't think you can go wrong, I guess, is my long answer either way. Right shot D are hard to find, but Demidov could be that next layer, the Patrick Kane to the Jonathan Toews type thing.
And you have, as Drance mentioned, Iginla at number 5 on your top list of prospects. And again, everyone can go check out Bukla's top 70 prospects up right now at sportsnet.ca. And, you know, Iginla is certainly a very well-regarded prospect, but I've also seen a lot of people saying more, you know, in that kind of 9-10 range. Like, could the Flames be in a position to draft him at 9? What do you see in him that has you bumping him up all the way to your top 5?
I love the fact that when the cards are on the table, like the big moments, the high leverage situations, that he finds a way to elevate and go to another level. So he's not a guy that you have to look across the dressing room in a game 7. I'm projecting this, but so far, like, you know, like gold medal game overseas at the U18s, playoffs, you know, against Wenatchee, second half of the year, for example, in Kelowna. You don't have to look across the room and say, can I get another 10% out of this guy, 15%? Like, you're not going to have to ask that out of him. He has it. Like, he delivers it in the big moments. And I think that that's, you know, you're programmed to perform when the stress is at its highest level and you can produce the way that he does. That tells me something about the athlete, and I trust him a little bit more. So, you know, again, in the top 10, you're always splitting hairs on certain things, right? Like, you know, what do you see? Because Lidstrom, for example, Caden Lidstrom, there's a lot of momentum on him to be possibly go at 4 or 5. And I like Lidstrom a lot. Some of the things that hold me back is, you know, I'm not as sure about the medical. I hope that he's 100% healthy. So, you know, I don't know that he's not. So, but I hope that he is. But the other thing is, I don't think that he's a centerman in the NHL long term. I think Caden Lindstrom's a shooter. He's a big body, powerful player. But I think he's a guy that wants the puck, wants to get it to the net. So he's not a distributor in the middle of the ice. So I think he's a winger as well. And I'm just trying to project how I kind of piece the puzzle together here for you.
So I do have a bit of a bone to pick of you, Books, which is that you had a top 70 list up at sportsnet.ca. The Canucks don't pick till number 90. So how are we supposed to find guys to dream on if for our Canucks listeners out here when you stopped at 70? Is there a chance that you're high enough on somebody in that 60 to 70 range that they could slip down to 90 where the Canucks are?
Absolutely. Like, that's the one thing about this draft. My list, I could have published something that somebody could have taken a week to read. You know, I got 125 guys total on there, but just to give you something to chew on, Jamie, like, back in the day, like in Florida or Nashville, Florida especially, we would only go to the floor with about 110 names total. Like, you know, because every team wants different things. And I'm talking about 110 names that we absolutely genuinely believe could be a Florida Panther. And obviously, if we were sitting on picks in the sixth and the seventh round and we couldn't move them for whatever reason, then we would go to our B list, if you want to call it that, and make a selection. But, you know, when you get into 90 in this draft class especially, there's so much of the same in this draft, mm-hmm. and the Canucks are going to be hard-pressed to let's just say they're going to have to really do their homework.
I can't recall, Books, but have I given you my Iginla hot take yet on air?
No, I don't know. Maybe. Tell me it again.
I will. My Iginla hot take is he's going to play games this year. Whoever drafts him, he's going to come to training camp, and they're going to be like, we have to see if this works at the NHL.
Somebody, you know, Merrick asked me that the other day on his show, and I said the same thing. I said that I believe that this is a guy that's going to get games this year. I mean, you know, no disrespect to like the Easton Cowans and these other people who have been on the cusp of that. Like, TJ Ginla is ahead of that curve already, you know, and these other guys have gotten games. And, you know, the fitness is there, the speed is there, the preparation is absolutely there. His testing, guys, was off the charts at the combine, too. I mean, like, there's no holes. He's already ready. So I believe he's going to challenge. I think he's going to push somebody for a job and make that NHL team think long and hard. And I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, get 9 games, call it 10, hopefully more.
With how do you go, if you go into a draft with, obviously you've had a good season, if you have no draft picks, right? You're not unhappy usually to be sitting on your hands on the draft floor as a group. If you go into a draft with lesser draft capital the way the Canucks will, how do you go about making sure, like, do you swing for more upside throughout the draft? Like, do you try and make it still an effective class, or how do you approach it as a pro scouting team or an amateur scouting team? Excuse me.
That is an excellent question. There's a couple of things in motion there. So the first thing you want to take a look at is your timeline. And what I mean by that is, like, you take a look at your depth chart, you take a look and see what you have coming. So, you know, Lekkerimäki, as a European, just using him as an example, his clock would have been different than, you know, Josh Bloom over here, you know, because of, you know, the timeline between a North American player and a European prospect. You get longer for the European. So you take a look at what's going to college, what's in Europe, what's in North America. And then, you obviously, when you're building out your list, I still believe you're always presenting to your general manager the best available player, because that asset has to be managed one way or the other. And if he doesn't land on the roster that we're trying to build, you hopefully have an asset that's valuable enough to punt out to another team in a trade, because they're going to value it. So I'm always looking for the best player. Now, there are going to be times that your general manager is going to say, listen, I think that we got to get on the clock for a major junior guy here. That big right shot D, you know, player A, I really like where he's going. I like his upside. You know, we talked about it last week, like the Josh Brown pick. You know, Brownie, we looked at him as a draft plus one, and he was older and he still needed a year in junior, but we felt like he would fit something in our mold at that time to kind of plug a hole in his development. So there's a little bit of strategy that goes on later on the draft that way.
You know, you mentioned you were on Drantz.
No, no, please. I lost count. You go.
That's all right. You mentioned you were on Jeff Merrick's show recently, and I think it was on 32 Thoughts. Friedman and Merrick were talking about, I don't know if I'd call it a proposal, but something that could happen in the next CBA negotiations, which was maybe a push to shorten the draft, go down to four rounds. And I think the idea here was, from an agent's and player's perspective, if you're drafted in those later rounds, you're kind of tied to a team while your development can take, you know, so long and go in all of these different directions. From a scout's perspective, from a kind of NHL team's perspective, what's your reaction to just this floated idea of shortening the draft, lopping a few rounds off the end?
Well, so strategically speaking, I read it and I thought about it, you know, over a cup of coffee, and I actually kind of like it. I think that it opens up the landscape to more opportunities to continue to get eyes on late bloomers, or even, you know, those players that otherwise, you know, how can I put this? Like, you know, they're not going to get signed by an organization. You don't want to necessarily wait for them to go back into the draft to go through the cycle again. It opens up some opportunities to get to know some of these players differently through player development, through development camps, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing I would say, you know, from a CBA perspective, is I wonder how the entry level landscape in terms of dollars would be affected, you know, the bonus structure, the A bonuses, et cetera. And I wonder what that would look like. So it would have some moving parts, but on balance, I'm not opposed to it, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, obviously the draft used to be, you know, Pekka Rinne was a ninth round pick to the Nashville Predators, you know, so then it's gone to seven. It's been to seven forever. I don't know if four is the number, maybe five is the number, but I can see the strategy.
You know, you mentioned looking ahead to the summer a little bit in free agency. You mentioned the some of the rumors that you're hearing about Chicago potentially being very active, right, wanting to take that step forward after a couple of really tough years. I think we probably look at Utah in a similar way, right, moving from Arizona. They're going to be very motivated to spend. So you've got two teams, at least, that haven't been big traditional spenders in recent years who might be primed to spend. You've got the salary cap finally going up by an appreciable amount, and even a little bit more than they first anticipated. You've got the prospect of future salary cap growth coming up as well. How wild could things get for player salaries this summer, given all of those factors that are kind of lining up together come July 1st?
Yeah, it's like Christmas shopping, right? It's a crazy season. And, you know, if I'm sitting in Utah, you know, with the challenges that they've had behind the scenes trying to get everything, all their ducks in order to be, you know, as competitive as possible on a shoestring budget, you know, obviously they're probably licking their chops saying, gosh, finally we can go out and do some things here. We're not actually absorbing money. We're actually going to spend some money, which is a great thing. But it can be dangerous too, because, you know, if you look at the crop of this free agency class, you know, every one of them is different. And you got to be careful with how you spend your cash. And if I'm Utah, they've had, like, the amount of draft picks they've made recently, they're going to have to start to – you talk about the four-round draft. How about Utah? There's only 50 contracts that you can sign guys to. I don't know where the clock is on their entire organization. I haven't taken a look at it, but – you know, some of these guys are going to be coming due sooner than later contractually. You have to make a decision or manage the asset, like I've talked about, and move it out. And when you start spending money in free agency, if you make the wrong choices, that can block some of those prospects from coming through as well. So it's delicate, but it's an opportunity for some teams like Chicago and Utah to take the next step.
Just want to ask you a question from our inbox, from our listeners. We had some people asking about the process of asking prospect questions, and one of our listeners asks, do you ever ask a completely random question that they could never, ever plan for?
Yeah. So for me personally, I'm not that guy. Like, but let me tell you, like, it happens all the time. So I'll give you guys an example. Last week, so the kids are coming through, and you ask them, what's the silliest question? Or I don't want to position it that way. Give me a question that you caught you off guard. And the one question last week was, if you could be any kind of an animal, what kind of an animal would you be? And you can't be a wolf or a bear, because we've heard those two too much already. And, you know, for me, guys, like, I don't know. Like, you know, so I just don't know. So I had a fascinating answer from, I wish I could remember who the player was right now, but he said, and this isn't actually an animal, but he called it a Pegasus. A Pegasus. Is that a flying horse, by the way?
Oh, this
Pegasus,
was Tej. This was Tej Ginla.
Yeah, Pegasus he said he's a Pegasus. Horse with wings. Yeah.
I would be a Pegasus because I could either hang with the horses like everybody else, or if I needed to, you know, achieve more, I could fly away and get the job done a different way, something like that, which is really crafty analysis on the spot. Fascinating, really. But it's not a real horse, and it's not got anything to do with hockey. But I mean, you know, Drancer, you and I have been around somebody years ago in our circles who would ask a question that was Army related, and, you know, would you rather be a medic, a helicopter pilot, or I think it was like a gunner or something like that. And I don't know. Like, I don't know, guys. I'm not that guy. I have an 16 year old at home now. And I know that if I asked him some of these questions, he'd look at me like I had two heads, you know, so there are some weird ones out there for sure.
I just imagine some team out there like scratching a Ginla off their draft list because he answered with a mythical animal instead of a real one. It's like, oh, sorry, you're not cut out for our organization, buddy. That wasn't what we asked.
I wonder though, like from the psych person, whoever asked the question, if he's thinking to himself, wow, like that just speaks to his creativity, like yeah. His, you know, his outside the box thinking. Cause I bet you it did. I bet you it did.
That's so funny. It's one of those things where it's like, what if you're making decisions based on the answer to that question? I think you've lost the plot a little bit, right? Like, because you can read anything you want into any potential answer to a question like that. Fascinating look behind the scenes. Thank you for playing along. Thank you for fielding a question from the listeners as well, Books. And we'll chat with you next week.
Sounds good, fellas. Enjoy the rest of your week and whatever you got planned for tomorrow. So look forward to next week.
Absolutely. Thank you. That is Sportsnet's
thanks,
Jason Buchla. And as mentioned, former NHL scout, you can go read his top 70 draft prospects hot off the digital presses up at sportsnet.ca right now. And I do love the part of that anecdote where the team had to outlaw Wolf and Bear because they simply just hear that answer over and over and over again. Were you pretending to have frozen on the screen there for a second, Drancer? Because I definitely thought you were frozen.
I was trying to throw you for a loop.
I was like, all right, I guess I'm just going to the break.
So I actually wanted to ask you, if you had to pick a mythical creature.
Okay.
And let's go Greek, from Greek mythology exclusively.
All right.
Well, Pegasus is Greek, so yeah. We're channeling Tej Ginla. What would your answer be?
What's the one... that's like the flying lion, kind of.
The chimera?
Yeah, is that it?
Yeah, that's the lion with like the snake's tail and like the weird hooves, and I think it's winged.
Yeah.
Chimera.
That's not what I'm thinking of. I don't think that's what I'm thinking of. But hold on. I'll have to figure it out.
Okay.
What I'm thinking. There's another one. What is it?
Fire-breathing female monster with a lion's head, a goat's body, and a serpent's tail? That's not what you're thinking of?
Griffin. People are texting it in. Griffin.
A griffin.
Yeah.
Grand Rapids?
Yeah, Grand Rapids. Big Grand Rapids guy. Yeah, I think I would go... I mean, I don't know if that's Greek enough for you, but I think I would go with a griffin. I mean, a flying lion. Like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty badass.
I'm a big minotaur guy.
I think that's... Yeah, and you're good at mazes. Right? And also Dom,
I
like
love
the Minotaur.
Maze. Are we talking mazes or like honey?
Labyrinths. And
I love the idea of Dom, like some people would sit down with like the New York Times crossword, sitting down with like a children's maze book at the end of the day to relax and unwind. Like, I'm crushing it. This is good.
My old man glasses on as I peered down above my nose.
Also the Minotaur, they would send people to be sacrificed to him once a year. So he had lots of days off. So he's perfect for Dom. and then
I'm going to sacrifice
you,
Thomas.
I think I'd answer Hydra. Like Hydra so that I have nine faces with which to side-eye you for this stupid question.
Is that like the Avengers?
And I would not be drafted.
Hydra, Medusa is the one who turns you to stone.
Hydra's like a snake.
She's a gorgon.
Yeah, she's a gorgon.
Hydra is a snake. You cut off one head, two more will appear, as the Marvel slogan tells you.
Yes. Very good. Lacutus of Borg says Canucks Twitter would be the Uruburus, a snake eating itself.
Uruburus.
truer words have never been spoken on this program.
That was a good one. Lakitos of Borg doesn't text in all the time, but he's money typically when he texts in. All right. Well, that was fun. Shout out to Tija Gimla, though, for not going. Because, like, okay, Wolf and Bear are off the board, which is hilarious to me. I would think you'd get a lot of lions, right? I think you'd get a lot of, like, bulls. Probably, you know, like people are just going to, okay, what's a fierce
horse.
Animal?
Horse. I'm just a horse.
Yeah. A shout out. I mean, I know it is still a horse, but shout out to a Gimla for thinking outside the box.
I wonder if anyone's just like, I'd be a show pony or like a fluffy kitten.
I'd be a squirrel. It's like, we're not drafting you, pal. Sorry.
Bear.
Sorry, buddy. Okay. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We will take a break. Get your thoughts in about the Canucks offseason. Any questions you want to run past us for the final segment? We got an open segment.
Hey, Jamie.
Yes.
What if a pest-type prospect was asked what animal they'd be, and they answered a squirrel, because I'm a rat, but I've got good PR.
But I don't look like a rat. People like me.
Yeah, like people don't consider me a rat because I've got this fluffy tail, but really I'm a rat.
I think.
Would you then like the answer?
I think for sure. Like, I think raccoon would work for that, right? Like, hey, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to survive. You know what I mean? Like, I am vicious.
I dig through trash.
I literally eat garbage.
I will absolutely eat garbage if that's what it's going to take for me to make it to the NHL. All right. Open segment coming up next. Get your questions in. I want to run another Filip Hronek take past Rantz as well on the other side. One more segment of Canucks Talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Big Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. This hour brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com or live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. And I won't belabor the point too much more, but I did have to read this one from Tyler on which animal he would be if he was asked at the NHL Draft Combine. This is a good answer. He says, truffle pig. I like going into the corners and getting dirty. He's doing the dirty work. He's digging for that gold in the muck like a truffle pig. I think that's a good answer from Tyler.
A high-quality response. We also got a text in that said, defense can win you championships was also demonstrated by noted defenseman Evan Bouchard winning the game, but for the other team. I want to note, by the way, for those Oilers fans who've occasionally been in my mentions dunking on me for about the idea that Hughes is clearly better than Bouchard, and you don't know what you're talking about if you don't realize that that's clearly obvious. With that primary assist, 5-on-5 to Evan Rodriguez, Evan Bouchard has finally passed Quinn Hughes. Just took him a bunch of extra games to do it.
He put it right on the tape of Evan Rodriguez in that one. Okay, so
Bouchard rules, by the way.
He's a good player.
I just want to note.
He's no Quinn Hughes.
I love him.
He's no Quinn Hughes.
It's just not Quinn Hughes.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of defensemen, we have talked a lot about Filip Hronek on this show. This market has talked a lot about Filip Hronek. Obviously, I would say it's the highest profile free agent decision the Canucks have to make, even though he's a RFA, not an unrestricted free agent. I think it's easy to look at it as the most important of the decisions they have to make with their own internal guys. You know, we were talking about it with Shayna Goldman earlier in the show, and I think we've tended to frame the debate as long-term contract versus trade the player, right? And that's understandable for a lot of reasons, right? Because if you think, if you buy the kind of maximum case for Philip Hronek and the effect he had on Quinn Hughes and the fact that the salary cap's going up, he's young, all of it, there are a lot of reasons why you would want to go long with the player. If you're on the more pessimistic side of it, I can also understand why you would want to explore trading the player and recouping some of the assets you use to bring him in. But reading your piece about salary cap projections up at The Athletic earlier this week, and kind of based on the conversation we were having on the show, there is a third option, which I don't think has generated a lot of discussion, and there's some reasons for that which we can get it into, but there is another route where this could go between Philip Hronek and the Canucks, and it's a one-year deal, right? Like, he has, for all the talk about, hey, he has Arbrights and how that hangs over it, that's what comes out of an arbitration hearing, if you go that far, right, is a one-year award coming out of arbitration. Now, I know in your piece up at The Athletic looking at the salary cap projections, you weren't saying it's going to be a one-year deal, or you weren't saying they should do a one-year deal or anything like that. You just kind of noted, hey, 6.3 would be somewhere in that neighborhood if it was a one-year thing, so let's kind of plug it in as a starting point for these calculations. The more I think about it, the more my initial reaction was, one-year deal, I hate it. You're walking him to unrestricted free agent. There's no certainty. You'd have such a tough decision to make at the trade deadline. They can't do it. The more I think about it, the more I think that I would be okay, at the very least, with that as a short-term solution for the Vancouver Canucks here, right? Because as we were talking about with Shayna earlier, it's not like either of the other decisions are a slam dunk. It's not like going 8x7 plus with Philip Hronek is a slam dunk. It's not like trading him and trying to fill in that spot next to Quinn Hughes is a slam dunk by any means. And I get it, okay, if you sign Hronek to a one-year deal this offseason, whether it's through settlement, whether you reach an agreement, whether it is coming out of arbitration, he's going to be a 27-year-old unrestricted free agent next summer. He's going to be in a really, really good spot. But I think the upside is, one, you keep his salary cap number a little bit lower going into next year. You preserve the partnership between him and Quinn Hughes that worked so well this season. So you at least don't have this massive, massive hole on the blue line you have to fill. And you buy yourself some flexibility. You buy yourself some time, right? Like, we talked about that. Hey, whether it's because you're going short-term deals this summer, maybe you don't even use all of your cap space, one of the smartest things the Canucks might be able to do is, if that high-end player isn't out there this year, keep your powder dry. Wait until it is before you really strike. And, you know, the more I think about it with Philip Hronek, I'm not really sold on him being that high-end, top-of-the-lineup type of defenseman that you go long-term on. But if you do a one-year deal, you're kind of doing exactly what we were talking about on the show yesterday. You're fixing the hole for this year, right? You're taking care of this season while also maintaining your flexibility and your options going forward. And yeah, it's scary, and yeah, there's potential downside, because if he pops off again next to Quinn Hughes, the number ain't going down. But the more I think about it, the more I think it might be actually maybe the best route through a pretty tricky situation with Philip Hronek here.
Yeah, I mean, I still think the best route is a long-term deal, because I want to bake in the upside, and I want to use a year where all sides would agree something like 6.5 is a reasonable, like, no matter how big the gap is between Hronek's camp and the Canucks camp, everyone would find it pretty easy to agree on like a relatively narrow range in which, you know, this last RFA year should be valued, right? Like 6.3 to 6.8, something like that. It's when you get an unrestricted free agency that, you know, things get tougher, right? The Canucks might be like, yeah, we value that at 6.5, you know, so are the same amount. And, you know, that's where I think Hronek's camp goes, 8.5, what are you talking about? We'll easily hit that if we hit the open market. And by the way, both sides have their arguments, right? Like, Hronek's impact probably is closer to 7 million than 8.5, probably is closer to 6.5 million than it is to 8.5. But the market will bear 8.5 for Philip Hronek if he's healthy all through next season. You know, if he hits another 35 plus points, like, he doesn't even have to get to 50, because other teams will look at it and say, well, he doesn't play PP1. He can play PP1 for us with that shot, right? We'll get him 15 more points easy, just out of deployment. So, I mean, for me, I'm not scared at all of a one-year deal. I don't think the Canucks should be. I think their preference is to get it done long-term. I think it has been all along, but, and I'm sure that's the case for Hronek too, right? Like, that's sort of where this leverage could tilt a little bit in the Canucks' favor, and why I do always, why I've always thought that like a mid-July or like, you know, day before the arbitration hearing settlement feels like the most likely pressure point for both sides, because if you're Phil Peronic, you still do want to get paid off of this season, if at all possible, given how well it went for you, right? You know, there is the downside to the player on the one-year deal. I mean, there's huge upside, but there's no floor to it, right? So it is a little bit of a leap of faith from a player's perspective versus locking in guaranteed money now, you know, especially when you play a physical position, a position where you're going to block shots, you're going to get hit, you're going to hit people. So, you know, that's why I do think that's where like the sides come together. It's like, you know, we're comfortable with a one-year deal. You're comfortable-ish with a one-year deal. Is there a chance to do something that makes sense for both sides long-term? Like, that feels like a, you know, you're not allowed to do it at the door of the arbitration hearing anymore. But pretty much, you know, the next best thing, the closest approximation that we have right now has always felt like the most likely outcome. But I think you're right. And I've sort of been on this for a bit. Like, Hronek to me is priority number one for the Canucks because he's the only one of these pending UFAs for whom the Canucks' edge at the top of their lineup is directly tied to, right? Like what Vancouver was able to do at the top of their lineup was so essential to their success this season, even if, you know, if there's still another level that it has to level up. And for me, Hronek, Hughes were like, it's Hronek, Hughes, Miller. That's like the three indispensable drivers of it. And then Besser, you know, a really important complement to it. Like the Canucks answer to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And then, you know, you'd love one more winger who could like really do that job. You'd love your Zach Hyman.
Yeah. Well, I think Drance is actually frozen this time. He faked it earlier in the show, but I don't think he's talented enough to pull off what just happened there. Oh, we got him back.
Can you hear me though?
Yes.
Did you lose me at any point?
Yeah, you froze. And I was like, this one's not a joke. I can tell he's blurry. No, that one, he can't, he's not that good.
You're good. You're not that good. I don't think you should be afraid of a 1 year agreement by any means, both because I think it's your clearest route toward getting the settlement you actually want, but also because look, there's a lot of things that the Canucks have space to do this summer, but have to be careful with because of what's coming down the pike, right? Like there is, you know, I think we can reasonably expect cap growth, but it's not locked in. There is a CBA expiry on the immediate horizon. There is that Oliver Ekman-Larsson balloon year cap challenge, which begins at the season after this one and then lasts for 2 years. So, you know, a one-year deal that lets you sort of make some decisions. You're going to have some tough decisions on Brock Besser. You're going to be going into the final year of Thatcher Demko's deal at that point. Yep. You've only got 2 years left on Hughes. Like there's a lot of things that, you know, I think it does make sense to like take a beat if you can, especially with a key player like Hronek. So I don't think you should be afraid of a 1 year deal by any means. It's just that you need to keep him. And then the other thing, honestly, as I've been looking at it more, Jamie, and just thinking about like distressed assets and, you know, if the Canucks lose Elias Lindholm, right? Like, if you lose Nikita Zadorov, well, you know, Brendan Dillon, I like Brendan Dillon, right? If you lose Ian Cole, well, Jalen Chatfield, I like Jalen Chatfield, and I can keep going. You know, Matt Wah and Henry Yokoharju, if he doesn't get tendered, and Eric Brandstrom, I'd roll the dice on that, and I can keep going. Like, I can go 15 names deep on defense, right? I can go a fair number of names deep on the wings.
Yep.
At center, especially in terms of like a defensive center, and a defensive center who's right-handed, who can kill penalties, I run out after Lindholm, and then I start saying things like, I like Chandler Stephenson, but he's better on the wing. You know, like you don't have a two-way winger like Mark Stone to put him with unless you move JT to center, which kind of defeats the purpose. You know, Alexander Wenberg. I like Alexander Wenberg as a third-line center. He's left-handed. You know, like
Teddy Bluger in-house.
He's not doing Lindholm things.
Right? Like Teddy Bluger in-house. Like, not a, you know, obvious offensive downgrade, but like, okay, you can see that as kind of a stopgap solution. But as you said, left-handed, right? Like, different. It's just a different type of player, ultimately.
Well, and career-high 30 points.
Exactly.
Like, you know, he's never hit 30 points in his career. He's you know, a fourth line center, ideally. So even though it did work with Garland and Joshua, and then here's the other part of this, right, is that Lindholm was a top six center for Vancouver in the playoffs, and he produced 10 points in 14 games. So even though he only scored 6 5-on-5 goals and, you know, had a pretty miserable offensive season, and even if the reality is somewhere in between the 44-point guy and the 10 points and 13 guy we saw in the playoffs, like, it's not like he was playing a depth role for the Canucks. They were using this dude. You know, so you're losing two-thirds of your second line in the playoffs? Like, that's tough, right? And then you go down, like, the list of, you know, underperforming expensive centers, like, because then I think about it from the perspective of, you know, I don't think you should buy out Mikheyev.
Yeah.
I don't think you should trade him with sweeteners, but is there a way to trade him for an expensive centerman who, like, fits what you need in your bottom six better? And it's like, man, the names, there's not even a lot of names. You know, like, I come back to, like, Christian Dvorak, who had, like, 15 points last year, like, really played poorly in Montreal, but, you know, had his best seasons playing for Rick Tocchet's Coyotes, so there's familiarity there. I mean, is that like a, well, why would they take an extra year of Mikheyev? Like, you'd probably still have to sweeten it. And it's so brutal. Like, the number of center, the level of creativity required if you're going to replace Lindholm, the immediacy with which find third line center becomes this team's toughest, arguably toughest assignment of the summer. You know, it's immediate. So honestly, I just want to note this as a reason to maybe not be completely dogmatic about, like, the 7x7, they shouldn't do that, which I still think that, right? Like, I still would lean against the Canucks committing that type of money in term to a player that age, who's a little bit redundant just given this team center depth as it stands. But it's not one that I'd, like, poo-poo immediately. I would at least, like, at least it's reasonable that the team would want to kick those tires and go as far down the road as they can before deciding, you know, to lose a guy they paid a lot for and who fit in pretty well in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That Lindholm contract feels like a deal where it entirely hinges on how close you think the team is to winning a Stanley Cup, right? Because that's the type of deal where if you're a no doubt contender, everyone looks at it on July 1st and is like, man, that contract's going to be tough in a few years, but you got to do what you got to do, right? You got to do what you got to do to chase that chase that Stanley Cup. So it's that kind of deal for me. And look, I don't think they should do it either. But as you said, you've got 3 more years of Quinn Hughes, right, on an incredible contract. You've got 2 more years of Thatcher Demko on a really good deal. You've got JT Miller, who's into his 30s. There is some logic, you know, if you do go if you do go, like, on a 1-year deal with Philip Hronek or something, right? There is some logic in pushing all of your chips into the next couple of years, right? And I think a Lindholm deal, as it would be a 7-year deal, that would be the logic behind it, right? I don't think anyone would be fooling themselves, like, hey, we're gonna love paying Elias Lindholm $7 million in years 5 through 7 of this deal, but that's not what it's about. It's about trying to get the most out of this group over the next 2 seasons. Again, I don't think that sways me to, you know what, they should go out and they should push the envelope even beyond 7.5 and go get it done. But I think that's what the logic would be, and you can kind of understand it from that perspective.
Yeah. In fact, I think a short-term approach through this offseason makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. You've laid out some of the stuff, which brings us once again to the narrow path, long path conversation, which we're going to be having for literally a half decade in this market, I suspect, right? The fact that realistically this team's best shot might arrive quicker than we expect. In fact, there's at least some chance that we just saw it. So, you know, I do think there's a whole variety of factors to be mindful of in terms of the ticking clock, the OEL buyout, the age of Vancouver's best players, and on down the line. The lack of prospects coming, the lack of draft capital this year, blah, 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 right? So, you know, if they decide to make some win-now moves, especially, you know, if they're able to find, sure, you do a Lindholm deal on a 7x7, but you go 1 year on Hronek and you're going to fit those into the same part of the puzzle. Like, to me, that actually isn't discordant necessarily, right? Like, would I prefer the opposite? I would. But if you're going all in this year, well, minimizing Hronek's cap hit and just doing the Lindholm deal that you have to do because that's where the market's at, you know, there's at least logic there, logical yep. consistency between those two poles. You know, I do think it's a defensible route through this offseason, even if it's not the route that I would like stamp as the one most likely to deliver a Stanley Cup to Vancouver in the next, you know, 5 years.
Now, I will say, I should note, I believe it was on the Jeff Merrick show today, Elliot Friedman said one of the things he's heard is that maybe Lindholm looking for a bigger role than he might have in Vancouver. Now, as you said, he was used as a top six forward during the playoffs, but it's the kind of thing where you're not going to, like, you're probably not going to move Pettersson to the wing to play with Lindholm, because that then you're just looking for a third line center again, right? And you're not actually strengthening your center depth. So he still would be lining up as your third line center, even if you're finding the minutes for him elsewhere and in other ways. And, you know, Friedman suggested that maybe that's not something that really excites Elias Lindholm, which you understand, right? Guys want an opportunity to be key players. Guys want the most minutes and the biggest role they can get. But that is an additional complication, right, to the Lindholm factor.
Let me just spin a quick tale before we go, because I've been thinking about this a little bit. You know, we're often keeping everyone updated with Friedman's latest on 32 Thoughts. But one thing he said that we didn't spend a lot of time on was he had some commentary on the Canucks players actively recruiting Lindholm to remain in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not that players' opinions are like perfect necessarily when it comes to team building. I mean, we've seen, you know, Tom Brady, or Patrick Mahomes, for example, like he really wanted them to draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire yep. and Sky Moore, like you know, LeBron James was willing to cut bait with, Alex Caruso and company to bring in Russell Westbrook. Like, I'm not sure about that. Right. But there's a common thread here, which is that the greatest, the winners, like if you want to win, right. One of the reasons McDavid's here is not just what he can do on the ice, but also that he's an awesome recruiter, like an awesome, awesome recruiter. And I think having that buy-in from players, getting to a point where players are taking an active role in convincing players to stay, you know, that is an awesome sign for like the long-term health of this organization. And I mean, you can see it, like JT Miller's been, you know, posting pics on social media. He's obviously stuck around town, presumably leading the charge in trying to make sure that this team is as robust as possible. Like, Canucks fans should be very excited if this group of players has like gone to that next level of like making it their job to contribute to winning in terms of, you know, exerting peer pressure and other engaging actively in recruiting. And it reminds me of a story. I think I've told it before, but Jim Rutherford got left at the altar by Paul Kariya in 2005 or 2004, whatever. You can look up the year. And it was because at the very last minute, Solani, having signed with the Avalanche, pulled Kariya out of the fire and brought him to Colorado instead of Carolina, leaving Rutherford and company to sort of scramble and figure it out. And Rutherford scrambled, figured it out, and signed Ryan Whitney, who went on to have, you know, enormous success, the Wizard. Not Ryan Whitney, Ray Whitney. The Wizard. Yeah. Not the pink guy, but no. The Wizard. He had an enormous amount of success in Carolina. And so you get to, like, I feel like that story says a lot about where the Canucks are at, right? It's like the Lindholm thing's complicated. It's great that players are actively recruiting, because you can see all throughout NHL history, you'll get all these like sudden turns as a result of the involvement of players and the relationships that they have with their teammates. But also, when it goes against you, pivoting sometimes results in a better outcome than your initial plan. That's what the Canucks may have to do with Lindholm, even if there aren't a ton of options.
By the way, Ray Whitney, 185 points in 72 games for the Spokane Chiefs in his draft year. Not bad. Went in the second round because he's only 5'10", but that's pretty good offensive season.
Rocks.
For Ray Whitney in the
Rocks.
Dub. All right, we'll leave it on that note. Again, we have the day off tomorrow. No crossover. We'll get back at the crossover next week, and we will catch up with you on Thursday on Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.